It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
So I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming into the studio this morning. Thank you, Mark.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming to the studio also. Thank you, Terry.
Absolutely.
And I want to particularly thank Philip Manning for calling down from Talkeetna and sharing about the area there. Thank you, Philip.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Kicking off today, I think the first topic we'll take a look at is a political one. We've had recently an announcement by Senator Don Levy of the Alaska State Senate that he was going to resign. That leaves an opening for a variety of potential candidates. Let's turn to Philip for a first reaction.
The way the legislature's gone the last few years, it wouldn't be out of the question for them to be in special session until June or July again with a primary in August. So there's a lot of reasons that this makes sense for him politically, I think.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
Just curious what kind of buzz you've heard up there about possible folks who are interested.
You know, there's been some speculation. Obviously, we have our current assembly member for District 7, Randall Kowalke, has registered to run for that seat now and registered as a Republican. Now it's up to the party to decide whether or not they want him to be one of the three finalists that submitted to Governor Walker. But that his name has obviously come up. Obviously, David Eastman and George Rauscher's names have come up since they hold the two House seats inside that district. And a name I heard the other day that I hadn't considered, and I don't know if this is a possibility, but might be a pick the party might want, is Wes Keller.
I have heard that name as well.
I've heard the name, but I've asked about it among folks who are probably somewhat in the know, being attached to the party in District 10. I heard there's no interest in him.
Okay.
Or on his part.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say Roger Purcell, because I'm pretty sure he's thrown down for it, too.
Okay. Terry, any comment?
Well, Philip would know most. I think another part of it is it makes sense for Dunleavy to do it because he needs the party's support, and it behooves the party to be able to name an incumbent who will have the upper leg when that seat has to be defended in November. So I think it makes sense for what Dunleavy is doing, but I think it also makes sense for the party who wants badly to keep that seat. And as everybody here knows, that's a completely unwieldy, huge district that takes a lot of boots on the ground or name recognition to win. And I think they felt probably threatened enough, just with the political scene right now, a lot of newcomers, a lot of energy into taking seats, that they thought they better have an incumbent in there so they'd have an upper leg on that. That can be, you know, they won't be able to fundraise either during the legislative session, but there'll be plenty of people doing that for them, you know, ready to hand them the money when they get off of that. And it's a sure vote for them. On whatever they don't want to do this year, which is more important than anything to them, because that's what the stance has been. Don't do anything about the economy. Just play it safe, at least until after the election. And they want somebody they can be sure won't break ranks with them.
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation. It also goes doubly if Eastman or Rauscher gets picked, because then the Republicans will have to do the same thing again for the House seat. But it sets up an interesting showdown, because there's obviously a strong dynamic in the Senate, you know, the pro-Walker people and the anti-Walker people. I don't see the governor as the process goes, the party submits a list of three names to the governor, who then appoints from that list. The last time this happened, when Wes Keller replaced Vic Coring, there were, I think, five or six folks who were instructed to basically present themselves before the district party folks, you know, do a speech, introduce themselves, why they're running. And from that sort of audition dynamic, The party then will choose its three people. I think in the interest, in, you know, strictly party interests, it seems likely to me that people like Eastman and Rauscher would be on the list, but I have a hard time believing that Governor Walker would pick either of them.
Right. And, you know, Eastman is kind of a loose cannon. Will he vote for a budget? I mean, will he stick with the caucus? I think you're right. I think that's a good observation. I would think, particularly since we know Walker's running too, he's looking for a moderate more than anything,
right,
who's not going to be anti his agenda on everything. So I think that's a good point, Mark.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because, well, and especially if a Roger Purcell is involved, he was tied to the Walker campaign and the transition. So I don't think it's a stretch to imagine that the party folks probably would not favor him, but he would be someone maybe that the governor would be more likely to pick.
One name I've heard thrown out there, and I don't even haven't talked to her, and I don't know, but is Donna Dearman from your area up there, Philip, has certainly been a party person and is actually a very energetic campaigner.
Right.
So that's one name I've heard, too. I don't know if that's
She was mentioned big time the first time that Dunleavy was talking about running for governor and leaving the Senate. Her name was high on the list, as I heard it.
Have you heard any indication of that?
I have not.
Okay. Well, you have mentioned the governor a couple of times in this discussion, and I came across a letter that was written by a new senator, Tom Begich. He had that printed in the Anchorage Daily News, and I wondered if any of you had seen it, because as I read through it, it was Senator Begich is typically solid writing and walking through some, I thought, criticisms to a degree, but encouragement for the governor to do a better job. And I wonder whether that is kind of one of the early gambits to suggest that they would like him to perhaps run, but run a little more strongly with some specific actions to be taken, with maybe a hint that there might be a challenger that would arise from the Democratic side.
Wouldn't that make it interesting? There's been a lot of speculation that a Begich is going to run, but maybe everybody's looking at the wrong Begich. And I did read that article, and now that you say that, Mike, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
But what do you think, Mark?
I think if he didn't file before the end of 2017, he's probably not running.
Okay.
But you never know.
Yeah.
Just mentioned. Of course, just today, we have the announcement for a candidate to run against the Dean of the House in the Congress, Alice Galvin. And many of you remember her from her activities associated with improvements to funding for schools. And she also happens to have a husband, Pat Galvin, who has had in the past two administrations work, both with Parnell and others. So any comment about that from you, Philip?
Well, it's, as we've seen in years past, it takes an act of Congress to try to unseat Don Young. I think Alice Galvin is a good candidate and could provide for a good challenge. She's got, like you said, she's got some bona fides as far as getting some things done in the state. Education advocates are always going to have kind of a built-in following. And, you know, one thing that Don Young has enjoyed for a lot of his time in Congress is support of the union wing here in Alaska, and someone who's a big education advocate might be able to chip into that through things like teachers unions.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's also a great time for a challenger, and no doubt about it, here in Alaska, anyone who, well, she's not running as a D, but she will essentially be the non-Republican, and that's a tough row to hoe here. But for sure, in the national sense, the timing and the momentum are definitely favoring challengers to Republican incumbents.
Yeah, I'd absolutely say that. It is, I mean, you know, anybody that missed Oprah Winfrey's speech the other day on the Golden Globes knows there's a strong, it's it's been said to be the year of the woman. And I think that, you know, Bernie Sanders has run as an independent for many, many years in a state that's very independent. He typically caucuses with the, you know, with the Democrats, but I think you're going to see, you know, I know Elise Gavin pretty well. I do think you'll see a different run campaign. I think part of the problem has been up to this point, running against Don Young the way you run a normal campaign against Don Young is not going to win. I think we found that from the last few challengers. But if she does something different, and she already is something different, she's a strong woman. We haven't had that since Benson ran against him, I guess. And, you know, I think there's a lot of national support right now to see women. They've been doing a lot of development in states, not just our states, with trying to get women to run for office. I think Philip makes a good point about the education sector jumping in behind her in the union sector. So, yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. Well,
and there's one other thing, just to remind. She's an independent with Republican heritage who, because of the way things are working out, could possibly run in the Democratic primary and get Democratic support. Once again, we have kind of a different way of doing things here in Alaska. Well, speaking about different ways of doing things, the borough and the city of Palmer and Houston and have all been watching the city of Wasilla. And now that Wasilla has decreed a ban on plastic bags beginning on the 1st of July, will Palmer, the borough, Anchorage, the state, and the world follow banning plastic bags? What's the sense up there now in Talkeetna that that step has been taken, Philip?
Well, I think now, I mean, eyes go to the borough at this point because the prospect of taxing or putting a tax on plastic on single-use plastic bags is going to be coming back up. The assembly had delayed action, of course, until they saw what Wasilla did. Wasilla has acted. So it's kind of, for our purposes up here, the ball's kind of back in the borough's court to see if they're going to do anything or if they're going to wait to see if Palmer takes action. But as far as up here, there's no immediate change other than the fact that when people make their runs down to Cars or Fred Meyer down in Wasilla, that they're not going to be coming back with plastic bags.
Okay.
Those Costco boxes.
Okay, so I know that Palmer has put on the agenda in the future a discussion. They're ready to go and talk about it. My guess is that on that agenda item on Tuesday with the assembly, they're not going to deal with that.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I honestly think maybe they will wait until next session to see if the state does it. And that's really what should happen at this point. That's what states have done. Hawaii's done it. It's just a much easier and cleaner for them to do it statewide than try to pick off small communities and hit communities. And, you know, the fact of the matter is the borough can't ban them. They don't have the power to ban them. They have to either tax them. That's really their only vehicle to do it, or just lay back and let the cities do it. And then you create an unlevel playing field with the stores that are in the borough, like Three Bears and that sort of thing, and then the cities. So I just kind of see this thing being drug out a little longer, too. There is some legislation sitting pre-filed about plastic bags.
Oh, there is.
I think Representative Joseph maybe
that's correct. Yep.
Did it. And it's
from Anchorage.
For a fee, 25 cents a bag. And I just don't think it'll get out this year. I think it's out there because it's a lot of that happens on the second session. Get it out there, get it known, and then next year work on it. But I can't imagine that'll get too much play this year. But they've surprised me before.
So, Philip, I know that up there in Talkeetna, there are a group of people coming up. They're going to be a special assembly meeting focused on financial planning and the 2019 budget. So it's a planning meeting for the budget.
Right.
Yes, it's an assembly meeting, a special assembly meeting.
Okay. Well, let us shift then to a couple of things that have happened nationally that I have found kind of interesting. The first is not only the publication, but the high rate of sales of a book, Fire and Fury, that has, I'm not sure what. Is it as I've read journalists who have reviewed the book, I'm into it right now. I will finish it. There are some people that say it's an example of shoddy journalism, and others say, well, even if you throw out 80%, what's left there is like...
How comforting is that?
Sifting through for the gold, and the gold is worthwhile. Has Fire and Fury come to Talkeetna, Philip?
There's certainly been a decent amount of talk about it amongst people that follow national politics. I don't know how many copies are floating around Talkeetna, because like you said, it's become rather hard to get a hold of. But, you know, talking about the quality of the writing and that sort of thing, there's a point to be made there, because, you know, as a journalist, you're considering this guy's, Mr. Wolf's primary source is looking like Steve Bannon for a lot of this. And so you've got to consider what that source is trying to give you and why they're trying to give you what they're giving you. At the same time, like you said, even if only one-fifth of the actual accounts are true, it's still pretty troubling, I think. But when you've got it in a wrapper that is not necessarily very credible, and Mr. Wolf's taken some criticism in the past for some of his work, that's when... I mean, it's one of those things where half the country is going to say, oh, my gosh, this is horrible, talking about the president's behavior, and half the country is going to say, oh, my gosh, this is horrible, this person is slandering the president. I think that's just the world we live in right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, folks are already divided. This book will probably, or the reaction to the book will probably be divided the same way. I doubt it will convert anyone.
You know, I think at this point, you know, he has said that he has tapes. And I wonder if that's the other shoe that'll drop. Because I've heard from some of my journalism friends, too, that they're not completely inspired by his writing or that his credibility. There's some things with that. But if he's got tapes that back up even a fifth of what you just talked about, that could blow. That's pretty huge. And it makes sense, you know, it makes sense for him to do it this way, is to put it out there, get a lot of people, you know, ginned up about the book, and then pull the tapes up, and then you sell more books. So I think that will be harder for the president's press secretary to defend if there's actual people on tape.
Well, I've read part of the book, and in the early section, there's a description now that it covered in a variety of ways of a dinner party with Roger Ailes and Mr. Bannon and others, and a lady who was there, corroborated the story, and although it was not explicit, as I remember, in the book, later revealed that dinner party actually occurred at Mr. Wolf's house. So he presumably was there to observe and remember and be backed up by other people who were there. And that's why I'm saying I think parts of this carry a not so much for me a question of whether it will convert someone one way or the other, but I think it's going to be looked back upon as a part of the record and evaluated on its accuracy and whether it can be backed up and so on. But it's going to be part of the record, and it has come at a particular point in time where it seems to have done one thing, and beyond selling many copies, it has caught people's attention worldwide. So I have found people who have read the book in the first week, and I consider them to be reasonably astute people that are busy. So they chose to put the time in to read this book. And I'm saying, what does that say? It's not choosing to do a tweet, but to put that kind of time in.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a buzz for a while.
So this leads me to my last piece, because I just realized that today, in reporting about an event, a meeting that occurred at the White House, NPR used a term which broadcasters shy away from. And we have this whole list, and Philip, you know it well, of words that are not going to be used gratuitously But in terms of reporting, they can be used. And NPR used the term by reporting, as did many other outlets, and saying the president used a derogatory term that would be normally banned from the airwaves. And what was interesting about that, and it's similar to the question about the book's validity, there were people there who said, yeah, he said this. And the report coming out wasn't, no, I didn't, exactly, but a kind of a fudging of that. Any commentary about that particular kerfuffle there?
It just seems very much to be typical of how things have been for the last year. There's a record of it. There were witnesses. The idea that you could say, no, it didn't happen, you know, should be troubling and mind-boggling to reasonable people.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the same people that supported him after the Hollywood tapes came out that were in his own voice and it didn't faze them really won't be fazed by that at all. They kind of like the thug mentality there, that kind of, you know, hard East Coast.
Until they're on the receiving end of
that's
it.
That's right, but some of them haven't felt the pain enough, or they aren't deflecting their pain to the right places. So I think it definitely damages him with the people he's always been damaged by. I think of the way we appear. The head of the United Nations had a little blurb about his reaction to it, and I think that, you know, it makes me just want to rub my eyes and cry that we have somebody that's speaking for all of us, which is what we do, and that's the way he's speaking. And those little kids out there that want to be presidents, that's their example. So I don't, you know, it's going to be good to kick around for a while. It's horrible, but it's not surprising anymore.
It's not.
Which is in itself distressing.
So let's finish up with one interesting topic that I briefly was talking with Terry about, and that is to burn or not to burn. Terry, what are the dimensions of that issue? Because I know that in Talkeetna it may have some effect.
Yeah, so it's been kind of blowing up some of the group pages on Facebook. There's a resolution in the packet for next Tuesday that's available on the borough website, just showing that the borough, who has been non-compliant in air quality for some years now, has been numerous times the assembly has had different presentation from staff, from the folks at the EPA, letting them know that that the quality of the air, particularly in Palmer and the Butte, where there's a lot of inversion, is not healthy. And there are standards, that because we all breathe that air, and air doesn't exactly stay on top of your house. That they had to take some measures to do something about it. Fairbanks has been through this, and it's been painful. It's been expensive. There was a lot of resistance to any type of change. But all this resolution does is to say, hey, EPA, we are going to do something about it. We're agreeing with you. We're going to enter this agreement to educate, to take some proactive steps in letting people know they're in violation and having some repercussions to do that, which they're going to be working on. But most of it is caused by the burning of wet wood. And, you know, that's not a service to the person that's burning it because it doesn't create any real heat, and it's terrible for the air. But people see that, interpret it as government overreach, and everybody's sure they're coming after their wood stoves, which in Fairbanks at this point, after years and years of fighting it, they've taken some pretty harsh measures trying to get people not to do it. But this is just the beginning of that agreement, and hopefully that people will be proactive, clean up the air, be good stewards, burn things more efficiently for both their own homes and for the good of the people. You can be against the federal regulation as much as you want, but you're not going to move that rock. It's a national federal regulation, and I think what we don't want to do is spend our limited funds that we have in the borough fighting that, pushing something that Fairbanks has been trying to push for years. It hasn't pushed anywhere through several administrations, and just get educated and do the right thing. But I encourage people to go to the SM too. It'll be interesting to hear from you, Philip, if it comes up in Talkeetna. I know it's certainly people are pretty crazed, a few of them. And again, it's always a handful. that have misinformation and are just sure that the borough is overreaching.
So, Philip, what kind of smoke and fire do we have?
Well, I think it's one of those things. The word is starting to get around up here that that might be something coming down the pipe. But what I've seen is, I think, kind of what Terry was talking about, which is I saw a couple of things on Facebook that were forwarded to me about, you know, the borough is coming to take away your wood stove based on, and this is a quote, junk science about air particulates. You know, and the sources, I think, included a website called junkscience.com as well as Breitbart News. So I think it is only a matter of time before that particular fight finds its way up here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you mentioned that the other F word, Facebook. And, of course, there's been an announcement by Mark Zuckerberg that Facebook is going to be a kinder, gentler, more focused on helping you share your personal information rather than being barraged by other stuff. Have you noticed any change there, Philip?
Not yet, but I have read that and that it could have impact on content creators as well, as far as, you know, that work not being seen.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to evaluating Facebook over the next few weeks and so on. And right now, we've just about run out of time. So I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming into the studio this morning. Thank you, Mark.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming to the studio also. Thank you, Terry.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
And I want to particularly thank Philip Manny for calling down from Talkeetna and sharing about the area there. Thank you, Philip.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Okay, we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.